Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, April 10th, 2024, on 91.7 FM, WHUS Storrs. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. All right, so what's going on with who? We'll start with me, I guess. Today I'm excited because I'm going to go to a new chiropractor. The only reason I'm not going to my beloved Dr. Suez is because he moved all the way to West Hartford and I'm far away from there. And the whole problem is that when you go to the chiropractor, you don't want him to be, when you get any kind of body work, you want the body worker to not be too far from the next place you can go to rest, usually your home. Because if you have a long, stressful drive to get to your body worker, it's stressful to get there. You get your body work done and then you have a stressful drive home. And it undoes the work that you did because now you're stressed out and tense. So it doesn't make sense for me to regularly go to West Hartford. And I keep saying I'm going to go once in a while. Haven't done that yet. And today I am going to go to a different chiropractor. So we'll update you on how that goes. So today I don't like to say necessarily what the exact date that we're recording is, but I will today because today we're recording on Eclipse Day. So if you're listening to this anytime after that, it first plays a couple days later on WHUS, but we recorded on Eclipse Day. So my appointment is during the eclipse and I haven't heard from the chiropractor deciding to reschedule the appointment, but what are you going to do? I'm hoping the appointment will be over for me to at least see part of it, or I'll say, hey, why don't we peek out the window?
Hopefully he has lights in the office.
Right. Yeah, indeed. Most offices do. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, they kind of shut for the day. So we're kind of excited about this eclipse. And there's some conspiracy theories that the rapture's coming and all kinds of craziness is about to happen. We did find that last week was sort of astrologically weird. We had some patient meltdowns and weird things happening. And my health stuff flared. You know, like I'm dealing with anxiety and blood pressure and flares of tremors. Right now I'm okay. So I had to tweak some things. And this week, one of the things I did in conversation with my friend, the lovely local herbalist, we shared about what we're doing for our blood pressure. And we talked about some nice herbs. So she said she added Linden, I always want to say Linden and Elizabeth, because Linden and Elizabeth are towns that are next to each other in New Jersey. And the first time I heard the word Linden, I had no idea it was a wonderful tree that had nervine herbal flowers. But anyway, so I'm not taking the herbs Linden and Elizabeth. I'm taking the herbs Linden, Cactus, and Passionflower. I added those. I'm already taking Hawthorn. Hawthorn, Linden, Passionflower, and Cactus are a nice blend to help you with blood pressure. Since Deb was having trouble with sleeping, which I'm not really having trouble with, she added California poppy, which I thought was interesting. And I might try that as well because it's so calming. But I don't really have a problem with sleep. And the thing is, when I shut down like rapidly and I don't like the feeling of uncontrolled, I'm losing it. So I don't know if I'll do the California poppy, but it works for her because she's having a sleep issue. And if sleep issue plus blood pressure is an issue, you can consider those herbs. So Hawthorn is a cardiotonic. So it's an herb that has anthocyanins that are strengthening to your blood vessels. And Hawthorn has wonderful mechanisms of action. It's a positive inotrope, which means that it makes your heart, every beat, it produces more blood. So it makes your heart, helps to make your heart more efficient, which is what cardio exercise does. So Hawthorn enhances that. And then it strengthens your blood vessels. And because it makes your heart function more efficiently, it can help to lower your blood pressure. So that's one of the ways that it works. Cactus is also strengthening to the heart. It's just saguaro cactus grandiflora. So it's the saguaro cactus. It's the great big cactus that you see when you go to Arizona. You can make a tincture out of it, and it's helpful for cardiovascular health. And then passion flower and linden are often used for blood pressure, but they are technically nervines. So if anxiety is a function of your blood pressure, then nervine herbs can be helpful. So any nervine, so if you have anxiety, take linden and passion flower are directly used to help with blood pressure, but anything that helps you calm down could be helpful. CBD is also being studied to be helpful for blood pressure. And so there are types of CBD that have been actually studied, and they show that blood pressure is reduced, and some of it has to do with reducing anxiety and just calming the nervous system down. So anything that calms the nervous system down can help to reduce blood pressure. And so I definitely need some of that. And of course, I also do things like yin yoga, regular yoga, regular exercise. All of those things are helpful. Deep breathing, just laying around and relaxing. I did a lot of laying around and relaxing this weekend. We felt like it was too cold to go out and go bike riding. So I didn't go. Ron went, and we'll talk about that in a minute. In terms of I had an increase in stress and increase in symptoms last week. So I had to ramp up and add back in some Buner herbs. So I put Japanese knotweed back in. I increased doses of some of the herbs, and then I increased my modified citrus pectin and added back in the binder. So now I'm up to 2 scoops of modified citrus pectin and 3 droppers of Japanese knotweed. I added Hotunia back in. So, and then I'm taking a bunch of other herbs to help with the blood pressure. So my kudzu is in there that's my friend that's neuroprotective. And I'm also taking motherwort. I forgot to say, I'm taking motherwort. I've been taking that right along because motherwort is also both a nervine and a cardiotonic. So I'm taking that too. Today I feel pretty good. I'm excited. I'm still feeling the nerve pain, and I'm hoping that I can get some insight on the nerve pain with the new chiropractor. And one of the things that's interesting is, unfortunately, Bartonella, and we know that I was exposed to Bartonella. Bartonella can cause radiculopathy, and radiculopathy sounds like
the
study of something that's ridiculous. I know. When I first said radiculopathy to my office manager, Amy, she said that, oh, it's a study of ridiculousness. It's not radiculopathy. It's radiculopathy. So it's pathology of the root. That's what the word means. So radix in Latin means a root. And so radiculopathy is something that's wrong with the root, and it's referring to the nerve root. So I have trouble with the nerve root somewhere between L2 and L4, which is giving me femoral neuralgia. And my femoral neuralgia this time around, you know, this spring, as opposed to last summer, is way more manageable than it was last summer. I think I just have a lot more stuff on board and a lot more tricks. And, you know, if I don't sit, if I get off it and if I rest, it gets better. And I'm already to the point where if I sleep, it's better. It wasn't that way 2 weeks ago, but now when I sleep, it improves. So everything is calming down. And the nature of neuralgia is it comes and goes, and there's different reasons why it happens. But, you know, I'm looking forward to being gone, and I'm hoping that between the chiropractic appointment today and the acupuncture appointment on Friday, it's going to be a lot better. And I'm just as long as I can go through my week in a calm and peaceful way. So that's what's going on with me. Ron went bike riding on the road yesterday, the road and the rail trail yesterday, and he did okay, but not perfect, right?
Not perfect. No, not even close. Not even close. But, you know, I was able to turn the pedals. I just have no power whatsoever. So that's a real problem.
Yeah.
But
anyway. You did get to go and you used your cross bike?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you went back out to Willimantic and back?
Yeah.
So how many miles did you ride?
Oh, no more than 15 or so.
Oh, you rode 15 miles with legs like that. My goodness.
Yeah, with legs that don't perform on hills.
Because you went from here to there.
Yeah, but it was generally a flat ride.
You know,
just a few hilly sections.
Yeah.
But the hills are short and they're over with quickly.
So we're continuing to give Ron extra protein, like whey protein, branched chain amino acids, stuff to reduce inflammation like curcumin and borage oil. And we're giving him proteolytic enzymes with the hope that they'll break down the protein that he was given, the drug that he was given is a protein. So we're continuing to do that. All right, so that's what's going on with us. So we have a few different interesting things for you today. And so we're going to start with talking about Shilajit. And we had started with it last week, and so we'll continue. And so Shilajit, I'll remind you, it's a resin, and it's a supplement that's common in Ayurvedic medicine, which is medicine that originates in India, has a lot of antioxidants, has a lot of health benefits. And we talked about how it can prevent or slow Alzheimer's disease and also raise testosterone and therefore sex drive in men and women. So men and women do like to take it. And so let's go to the third thing that it can be helpful with, which is chronic fatigue, which makes me think about taking it. Although my binder has fulvic acid, which is a large component of Shilajit. And the thing with Shilajit is it has a lot of minerals in it. So chronic fatigue can make it difficult to work or go to school or do simple everyday activities. If you do some activities, then you have post-exertional malaise, which we talked about last week. They think there's some mitochondrial dysfunction going on, that the energy systems, the energy centers in all of the cells in your body don't work that well, and those cells don't produce enough energy. So there was a study in 2012 where they gave lab rats Shilajit 21 days and induced chronic fatigue by forced swimming for 21 days. Poor rats. And they think that the Shilajit prevented mitochondrial dysfunction. So if you boost your body's mitochondrial function, it might improve your energy levels. There's a lot of fulvic acid in it, as I said before, which is a lovely antioxidant, and it's also anti-inflammatory. It may protect against free radicals and cellular damage. So it can help to slow your aging process down. Shilajit is something you may be able to use to help prevent altitude sickness. I like that as well as rhodiola. So at high altitude, you can get pulmonary edema, where you get fluid from your blood vessels and lymphatics going into your lungs. Of course, you can have trouble sleeping. You can have lethargy because you're not getting in enough oxygen. You can have pain. You can actually have dementia from being at high altitude, where you can't think straight. And of course, you have hypoxia. The whole syndrome is caused by hypoxia because you're not getting enough. You just don't have enough surface area in your lungs to accommodate the low oxygen that you're breathing. And people who live at high altitude, they accommodate by building more alveoli. So alveoli are the little air sacs that hold air in your lungs. They're the end point of when you breathe in. You breathe in, through your mouth and or nose into your larynx, into your trachea, and your trachea goes down into your chest and branches off into the bronchi. The bronchi branch off into the bronchioles, and the bronchioles branch off into the alveoli, and they're all surrounded by interstitial tissue that holds them in place. And so you can build more alveoli, and as an adaptation, your body will build more alveoli so that you have more surface area to absorb oxygen. And that's an adaptation to high altitude that your body does. And so Shilajit has a lot of antioxidants, and so you're going to get more free radical damage if you're not getting enough oxygenation. And so Shilajit's going to help prevent that. And so there's a lot of the antioxidants can help the immune system, memory, inflammation, energy, and it's also has some diuretic effects, so it can remove excess fluid from your body. So Shilajit can help with iron deficiency anemia. If you don't eat enough iron, you can get tired and weak and cold hands and feet and a regular heartbeat and headache. Shilajit can increase your iron levels. Researchers induced anemia in some rats, and rats in the third group got Shilajit after 11 days and found that in blood samples that the animals had higher hemoglobin, hematocrit, and red blood cells compared to the rats in the other group. So Shilajit can help with iron deficiency anemia. And I have patients who, no matter what iron I give them, it makes them constipated. No matter what iron, if I give them an iron pill, even if it's great, you know, no constipation iron like iron bisglycinate, they still get constipated. So it might be a good idea to try Shilajit in those people. Shilajit can help with fertility. It's a safe supplement for male infertility. And they had a supplement, they had a study where they had men take Shilajit twice a day after meals. 60% of the males showed increase in sperm count and also sperm motility. So that's kind of an exciting study. Then heart health. It can help with your heart health. They tested it on lab rats. They gave the animals a drug, isobutyrinol, to induce heart injury. And the animals that were given Shilajit had fewer cardiac lesions. If you have active heart disease, you're not supposed to take Shilajit. And in menopause, people who are assigned female at birth can begin to lose their bone mass, making their bones weaker. And there was a 2022 study, pretty recent, that showed that taking Shilajit supplements may help postmenopausal women with bone mass loss and improve bone density. And so with all the other conditions that it can help with, that it might be a really nice thing to add. So it can help to reduce the possibility of osteoporosis and low bone density. It's not a good idea to consume raw unprocessed Shilajit because it can contain heavy metal, free radicals, fungus, and other contaminations that can make you sick. So you want to make sure it's pure and it has been purified. It has to be purified and all those things taken out. So the thing is, it's an herbal approach, so it's not monitored by the FDA. So you have to make sure you get a really good source of Shilajit. You shouldn't take it if you have sickle cell anemia, hemochromatosis, too much iron in your blood, or thalassemia, and you can have allergies to it. You can get it in liquid. You can get it in powder. And if you and follow the instructions, and you're not going to be taking very much. You're going to take like the size of a grain of rice a few times a day. That's how you're going to take it. Or you can take it a couple times a day as a powder. And you want to check in with your friendly local practitioner to make sure that it's safe for you to take. All right, so that's an interesting. I thought Shilajit sounded interesting, and I like that it has fulvic acid. It's a great antioxidant. My binder also has fulvic acid in it, and so I'm taking a little bit of that every day right now. All right, so another herbal friend I have here is rhodiola, which I'm taking right now, and there's a lot of health benefits of rhodiola. Rhodiola rosea. It's a very nice plant. It grows in the cold mountainous regions of Europe and Asia. It's considered to be an adaptogen, so it helps your body adapt to stress. Love it. There's a lot of active ingredients. The most potent are the rosavins and the celadricide. And it's been used in Scandinavia and Russia for centuries, and it helps with anxiety, fatigue, and depression. And it has a lot of health benefits. One of the things it's shown, it's very pretty. There's a picture of it here. And it looks a little bit succulent. I'm not sure if it is succulent, but that's what the leaves look like. And then it has these beautiful compound yellow flowers in the middle. It's an adaptogen. So it's a substance that increases your body's resistance to stress in many non-specific ways. When you have adaptogens, when you're stressed out, it's thought to help you handle stressful situations. It helps to improve symptoms of burnout, which can occur with chronic stress. They gave it to people with stress-related burnout. They took 400 milligrams for 12 weeks, and they showed clear improvement in various symptoms like stress and depression that are commonly associated. The most improvement happened during the first week and continued through the study. That's great. That makes me want to take more rhodiola than I'm taking now. That's interesting because I'm taking tincture now. Maybe I should take pills and take a 400 milligram extract. It can help with fatigue. And I know that since I've been taking more adaptogens, I have had less fatigue. I know that. So I've been taking rhodiola, and I've been taking spirulina and Eleuthero and cordyceps, and my fatigue has improved. It definitely has. Because it's an adaptogen, it's thought to help alleviate fatigue. There was a study of 100 people with chronic fatigue who received 400 milligrams of rhodiola. That seems to be the dose for your average size person, and it improved their fatigue, quality of life, stress, mood, and concentration. So that's really nice. It might help you to feel less depressed. It's thought to occur when chemicals in your brain become unbalanced, and often you get prescribed antidepressant drugs for that. It's been suggested that rhodiola can have antidepressant properties that help balance your brain neurotransmitters. There was a study that compared rhodiola with sertraline, which is known as commonly as Zoloft. In the study, people diagnosed with depression were assigned to either receive rhodiola, sertraline, or placebo. And rhodiola and sertraline both reduced symptoms of depression, but sertraline worked better. But rhodiola had fewer side effects and was better tolerated. And one of the things about sertraline is sertraline is an SSRI, and that means it's a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, similar to Paxil, which is paroxetine, fluoxetine, which you may know as Prozac, citalopram, which is Celexa, and escitalopram, which is Lexapro. Those are all SSRIs, and they all can have side effects. And one of the side effects is weight gain, and another side effect is reduced libido. And the other side effect is it really does level out your mood, but it makes doesn't always do this, but it can make it so that you just don't have the highs and you just don't have the lows, that you go to the movies and everybody's laughing hysterically at something funny and you're like, eh. So you find that you don't feel intensely either way. And some people don't like that. And especially if you're an artist, you want to feel your feelings. Otherwise, you can't do your art. So rhodiola doesn't tend to do that. SSRIs, that's classic of SSRIs. It might improve your brain function. So for your brain to function properly, you need a good night's sleep, you need to eat well, you need to get exercise, and rhodiola can help with this. So rhodiola has been found to improve learning and memory function, and they did an animal study that showed that a single dose of rhodiola helped memory and had an antidepressant effect on mice, and that it could become a good tool to increase cognition and help mood disorders in people. Another research review concluded that therapeutic properties of rhodiola may benefit age-related diseases. So that's exciting. It might also improve exercise performance. Maybe you should take it. It's been claimed to help improve sports performance. It reduces physical and mental fatigue and increases antioxidant activity, although there are mixed studies. There was an animal study that found that it can improve muscle power and strength performance in rats. They were given rhodiola and Rapponticum carthamoides, which is also known as RAW. And they found that the rats performed better. Another study found that ingesting rhodiola shortened reaction time and total response time in young, healthy, physically active men and increased antioxidant activity, but didn't affect overall endurance. Rhodiola has been shown to improve exercise performance so that it helps you to decrease your perceived exertion. So that means you're going to be able to work out at a higher level and not feel like you're working as hard. That's really nice. Mm. So they did show that rhodiola didn't change oxygen uptake or muscle performance or the immune system in marathon athletes. Well, the only thing with that is, though, marathon athletes, I don't know if there's much you can do to help with that, because you're running a marathon. That's very, very hard on your body. And when you are training to run 26 miles and then you regularly run 26 miles, it's so hard on your body and there's so much oxidation that if you're going to do studies on supplements for that, you may not get a lot of good results, because running marathons is profoundly hard on your body and you have to do a lot to help to calm that down. And the best thing is to rest. And you have to rest and you have to eat really well. And you have to just realize that running marathons takes a huge toll on your body. There's just so much breakdown that happens. So rhodiola can only do so much. I mean, this is not an example of standing in front of the train and asking the practitioner to just give you pain meds and arnica to help with the effects of being hit by the train. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't... And if you run marathons and you love it, I'm not saying you should stop. I'm just putting out there that long, steady state cardio is very taxing to the body. It causes a lot of oxidative stress, and running marathons is particularly hard on your body. It's just kind of the way it is, you know. So there is an idea that the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health says that there's not quite enough evidence from human studies to conclude that it's helpful for health-related use. But, you know, there are studies that show that it's promising. Rhodiola may help with diabetes. That's, of course, when your body has a reduced ability to produce or respond to the hormone insulin, resulting in high blood sugar. And people with diabetes usually use insulin injections or medications that increase insulin sensitivity to manage blood sugar levels. And there are animal studies that show rhodiola can help with diabetes management. And it's particularly the salidricide that's in rhodiola. It's been shown to help protect against diabetes and diabetic neuropathy, that's kidney disease, in rats. The studies were performed in rats, so you can't quite generalize it to humans, although that is kind of why you study it in rats first. And then as long as it's safe, you can study some of the same things in humans. So, of course, if you're going to take rhodiola, you want to talk with your practitioner first. It might have anti-cancer properties. And again, it's the salidricide. And it's being investigated for its anti-cancer properties. And it's been shown that it may inhibit the growth of lung, bladder, gastric, and colon cancers. Researchers have suggested that rhodiola may be helpful in treatment of many types of cancers. And so you can't just throw it out there and say, yes, this is definitely going to treat your cancer. But there are some promising studies. When you take it, it's available in capsules and tablets and teas. The thing is, if the studies were done on that 400 milligram dose, it's probably going to be easiest to take it in a capsule. However, right now I'm taking it in a tincture. And of course, if you talk to Stephen Buhner, he's going to talk about how when you take tinctures, you're getting the whole plant. There's no extracts. There's benefits to taking tinctures and taking the whole plant that you don't get in extracts. On the other hand, if there's a proven value to taking an extract, like what they studied was 400 milligrams of extract, and they then got this effect, and that's the effect you're looking for, it might be a good idea to take the pill. And I may go back and forth and try the pill and versus trying to take the tincture. It's good to take on an empty stomach, but don't take it before bedtime because it's energizing. You can take it in capsules or tablets, and they come in like 100 to 200 milligrams with about 3% rosuvins. And it, as we said, it may be effective for improving stress, fatigue, and depression. And the doses that have been studied are 400 to 600 milligrams a day. Depending on your body weight, you might need more or less. And when they're talking about 400 to 600 milligrams a day, I would say that that's roughly going to be 150 to 200 plus pound person. So if you weigh less than that, you may be able to you may be able to take less. And so when there's an average dose, you have to factor in, are you of average weight or are you plus or minus that? And then it also depends on how sensitive you are to medication, supplements, things like that. Sometimes for people, regardless of their size, a little goes a long way. That all depends on how you break things down. It's generally safe and well tolerated. There are a few serious side effects. You have to make sure about purity, branding. If you get it from your local friendly practitioner who is getting professional quality supplements, you shouldn't have a problem. And if you get it from your friendly local health food store, that's a reputable health food store, you should be okay too. It's been used in traditional medicine in Scandinavia and Russia for many centuries. It can help strengthen your body's response to stressors like psychological stress, fatigue, and depression. And other studies and test tubes in animals have suggested that it may help protect against certain health conditions like cancer, depression, and diabetes. And like I said, look for supplements that have undergone third-party testing and come from somebody reputable. There's generally a low risk of taking it, but as with anything, you should always talk to your healthcare practitioner. All right, so next interesting thing, we're going to talk about lithium. So lithium is an interesting mineral, and I'm particularly going to talk about lithium orotate. So there's a whole video you can watch on lithium orotate if you want to. Let's see. So it's this. So I'm looking at the Nootropics Expert, and there's a video about lithium orotate that you can watch if you want to. But anyway, so the main takeaways are that it's a natural alkali metal. It's essential for reproductive health and overall wellness in humans and animals. It's historically used therapeutically. It's studied for neuroprotective and mood stabilizing effects. When you microdose lithium, like with lithium orotate, it can help with cognitive benefits such as mood balancing, helping with growth factors, neurogenesis, and brain protection. And to get adequate lithium from your diet, when you get it from your diet and in water, it can help to prevent mental and neurological diseases. While low levels, when your lithium is too low, it can be associated with depression, anxiety, and memory decline. And when you take lithium orotate, it's a way to microdose lithium. And we're saying microdose because when you get prescribed lithium from a psychiatric practitioner, you're getting lithium carbonate and you're getting it in hundreds of milligrams. So it's this soft, silvery, white alkali metal, and it's very reactive. It sparks when it touches water. It's not found in nature on its own. It's found in mineral compounds and also in mineral water. Their cosmologists believe that lithium was one of the three elements synthesized in the Big Bang. So it's been around for a very long time. As I said, most of us think about lithium prescription with treating mental illness like bipolar disorder and mania, or the lithium ion battery on your phone or in your hybrid car or in your electric car. And the antipsychotic medication lithium isn't actually a drug. It's just it's a naturally occurring mineral. And it's the same family of salts. It's in the same column of the periodic table as potassium and sodium. So as a nootropic, which means a nootropic is something that affects your cognition and brain function. When you microdose lithium, it can provide some amazing anti-aging benefits. So there's research that shows that low-dose lithium may help slow the production of neurodegenerative disease like Alzheimer's, dementia, Parkinson's. Low-dose lithium can help neurogenesis, so to rebuild nerves, and it's a mood stabilizer. So lithium helps to balance your mood. It can calm mania, extreme highs and lows, but just what we think of when we're treating bipolar disorder. It can help you decrease your sensitivity of the, that's interesting. It decreases the sensitivity of the postsynaptic norepinephrine receptor. So if you tend to be, anxious, too much epinephrine can make you feel more anxious. So if you reduce the sensitivity of that receptor, less norepinephrine is going to bond, and then it can calm you down. And it also increases norepinephrine into synaptosomes, and it can prevent the release of the neurotransmitter, and so it can enhance the transport of B12 and folate into brain cells, which are going to affect mood and aggression. So that's going to be a very good thing. What's interesting about that is there are people who you've heard of the MTHFR gene? Probably not, right?
No.
So MTHFR stands for methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase, and people can have variations in copies of that gene. And methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase is an enzyme that converts folic acid to activated folic acid. So if you have an anomaly in that gene, you don't convert your folic acid very well. And there's a couple of anomalies. One is the C677T anomaly and the other is the A1298C anomaly. And when you have the C677T one, you're more likely to have increased homocysteine. Increased homocysteine, you won't be as able to convert your homocysteine ultimately into glutathione, which is detoxifying. And if you have excess homocysteine, it can cause your blood to be thicker and it can cause your cholesterol to go up and it can increase your risk of cardiovascular disease. So if you have adequate lithium, what's this saying is it's helping with the transport of B12 and folate into your brain cells. So if you have an MTHFR anomaly, you have a harder time doing that. And so if you take lithium, you're going to get more B12 and folate into your brain cells. so that all of the functions of vitamin B12 and folate, you're going to do better. You're going to have more just generally better brain function. One of the things we see with people in the autism spectrum, and that includes people with ADHD, is it's common for people within the spectrum to have MTHFR anomalies. So lithium is something that we definitely consider for people in the spectrum. And certainly, like children with children, especially if they have a lot of agitation and anger, or just agitation in general, we consider microdosing lithium. I've started giving my ADHD kids and spectrum kids very low dose lithium. So we start with 1 milligram a day, and then I have the parents dose up till they find a dose that works for the child. And, you know, 5 milligrams a day is helpful for me. And I'm, you know, when I'm in that average weight range, and that somewhere in the high 140s, low 150s, and 5 milligrams is not very high. I mean, that's a microdose, and that's helpful for me. So a little kid could probably get away with a milligram or two. And so depending on the day, I take differing doses, and I'm starting to consider taking a dose every day because I have all these interesting neurological things going on. So lithium upregulates brain-derived neurotrophic factor and nerve growth factor and neurotrophin 3 in the receptors and stimulates the proliferation of stem cells in the brain. So this is going to be really good for anybody who has any kind of dementia or brain degeneration. And poor me with all my neurological factors. It's also neuroprotective. It increases your gray matter, increases DNA replication for neurogenesis, prevents apoptosis, which means destruction of cells, increases N-acetylaspartate, and it inhibits beta amyloid secretion, which means it's going to be directly helpful for people who have Alzheimer's disease. So that's very interesting. And protects against damage once it's formed. So if you have beta amyloid, it'll help protect against damage a bit against that. It also helps to chelate aluminum, which is a factor that's thought to be problematic in Alzheimer's disease. And it also protects against glutamate toxicity. So if you have excitotoxicity in your brain, glutamate can be destructive to brain cells, and lithium can protect against that. It's this alkaline mineral and one of the trace minerals considered essential for animal and human reproductive health. And it was discovered as a chemical element in 1817. Its first recorded modern medical use was in 1871 for the treatment of mania. So people have been using it for mania for a very long time. But the use of lithium for therapeutic use goes back to Greek and Roman times. People soaked in alkali springs to help with physical and mental illness. People have been using mineral springs for therapeutic use ever since. So the Lithia Springs in Douglas County, Georgia was so popular that people came for miles just to drink the water. And there are various places in the country that are called Lithia. And if you see that there's a town called Lithia near you or that you're driving by it, do you remember when we went to Lithia?
No.
Lithia, Florida.
Okay.
There's not too far from Sarasota. Okay. So usually if a place is called Lithia, somebody discovered that there was lithium in the spring water there. That may be true. I mean, Lithia Springs, there's definitely lithium in the spring water there. And it could also be that somebody just moved there from Lithia and they took the name with them. So the thing is, if you find out the name of the town is Lithia, find out if there are springs there, because there might be. There was a Sweetwater Hotel, which was a 500-room resort in 1887 in Lithia Springs, and a lot of famous authors went there, business people, prominent politicians, so they went there to take the spring waters. There are critical health benefits of lithium that have been studied all over the world. There was one study, this is really interesting, from 27 Texas counties from 1978 to 1987. They found that rates of suicide, homicide, and rape were significantly lower in counties whose drinking water contained, they found that rates of suicide, homicide, and rape were significantly higher in counties whose drinking water contained little or no lithium.
Huh.
Isn't that interesting?
That's very interesting.
Yeah. And there's a study of lithium levels in tap water in 18 municipalities in Japan showed that standard mortality rates were lower in places with higher lithium levels. I'm going to start taking this stuff every day.
Yeah.
Yet another study conducted in Texas found the original findings in that state that drinking water samples found a correlation between lithium levels and suicide rates. In other words, the less lithium, the higher the suicide. So when they did meta-analyses of lithium levels in public drinking water, that increasing lithium levels of drinking water could reduce the risk of suicide and justify administering lithium to tap water.
Hmm.
Let that sink in.
Yeah.
That, I always think let that sink in is kind of an annoying thing to say, but I feel like that should be allowed to sink in. So there was an article in 1949 in The Lancet. John Cade wrote it, and he's credited for the modern medical use of lithium as an effective treatment for manic psychosis. And the FDA approved high-dose lithium carbonate and citrate in 1970 for the treatment of bipolar disorder. The carbonic acid and citric acid are mineral carriers to transport the lithium through your body. Doctors have prescribed lithium off-tablet for migraines, seizure disorders, and psychosis, usually after other treatments have failed. That's interesting. So again, I have tremors. That's why I've been taking the lithium, but I haven't taken it daily. In the most recently published research on lithium, we realize it's essential for optimum health and brain function. The lithium from our diet provides many neurological and psychiatric prevents many neurological and psychiatric problems. Microdosing lithium as a nootropic with lithium orotate can be helpful for making up what we don't get in food and water. It is naturally available from fish, processed meat, milk, dairy products, eggs, potatoes, and vegetables. Your typical diet dietary intake can range from 2 to 600 micrograms, so your diet's not going to contain very much, and it depends on where the lithium, where the food is grown, how much lithium there is in the soil. How does it work in your brain? Well, it's a mood stabilizer. Recent research has discovered that its mood stabilization may be because it improves the production of new brain cells, which is neurogenesis. Inhibits glycogen synthase 3 beta, and that inhibition upregulates BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, and insulin-like growth factor, which will stimulate neural stem cells to produce new neurons in the hippocampus. While neural stem cells produce new neurons in the hippocampus, mood and memory work as designed, but a breakdown in neurogenesis results in mood disorders. It's been known to control mania. I'll tell this story again. So my father, of blessed memory, he had bipolar disorder. His brother of blessed memory, my Uncle Bobby, had bipolar disorder. And my grandfather, Theodore Roosevelt Storch, yes, that was his name, of blessed memory, bipolar disorder. And so my father struggled with this his whole life, and finally it got to be too much for my mom. My mom said to him, you're going to go to the doctor or else. And we won't get into what else was, but what else was bad enough that he went to the doctor. And so they tried my poor dad on many cocktails, and they don't like to use lithium. They like to use lithium as a last resort. So they tried him on antidepressants. I remember he was taking mirtazapine. At some point he might have been taking fluoxetine. They tried him on anti-seizure meds, and I remember when they gave him topiramate, it knocked out his personality, and I said, Dad, go home, get off this stuff, have him give you something else, because as much as my dad was no fun when he was in an angry bipolar state, I couldn't stand to see him with no personality. So I said, get off this drug, have him give you something else. So they tried this, that, and the other thing. Finally, they put him on lithium, and the last 5 years of his life, he was better than he'd ever been, and he was happier than he'd ever been. And I went to my mother and said, after he passed, I said, Mom, do you think that the reason Daddy was so happy in the last 5 years of his life was because he had found Chabad, which is this, this lovely Jewish group that invites less practicing people in. And he was very happy there, and he felt very familial there. Do you think it was because he found Chabad? And she looked me in the eyes, and without blinking, she said, it was the lithium. Yeah, so she definitely thinks it was the lithium. So lithium was very helpful for my dad and his bipolar disorder. It really stabilized his mood. I am his daughter, and I know that I have an MTHFR anomaly. I have one copy of the C677T anomaly, and that came from somewhere, right? So probably both of my parents have it. Since I'm heterozygous, somebody had a null gene, that they had the normal copy of the gene, and one or both of them. So that means that one or both of them are heterozygous. And I inherited the C6F17. If I'm not careful, my homocysteine rises, and I've seen it rise. Not to crazy levels, but I've seen it go as high as like 11, 12, and we like to see it in the 7-ish range. So I take methylated B vitamins right now, but I think I'm going to start taking lithium every day because it just makes sense for me. But I'm not going to take lithium carbonate. I'm going to take probably 5 milligrams of lithium orotate, and we'll see how that goes, and I'll let you know, because I have this unstable nervous system with these tremors, and I'm taking the lithium therapeutically, and maybe I should just take it every day.
Okay.
Yeah, so we'll see.
Whatever works.
Whatever works, right? And it's harmless and helpful, is what this is saying. Lithium is and it's neuroprotective. Your brain cells are at constant risk of damage from exposure to toxins that you get from food, air, water, and the environment, and all the Easter candy you ate. So glutamate, I know we got too much Easter candy.
Yes.
But the thing is, you have the Easter candy. You don't have to eat it all tomorrow. And we haven't been.
Or next 3 months.
That's all right. So we won't buy candy for a while. It's fine. Glutamate plays a major role in synaptic plasticity needed for learning and memory, but when it's overactive on the NMDA receptors, it can cause neuron death and implicated in Alzheimer's, Huntington's, and Parkinson's disease, and lithium inhibits this overactivity. It also increases the production of a neuroprotective protein called BCL2. Researchers maintain that lithium is the only medication that's been demonstrated to significantly increase BCL2 in your brain areas. It's been recently evaluated for treating traumatic brain injury. There was a 2014 study by a guy named, are you ready for this? Peter Leeds.
No.
Stated that lithium had demonstrated robust beneficial effects in experimental models of traumatic brain injury. This includes decreases in TBI-induced brain lesions, suppression of neuroinflammation, protection against blood-brain barrier disruption, normalization of behavior deficits, and improvement of learning and memory, among others. So here's a nice little graphic for you. Lithium is helpful for reducing inflammation. It can reduce inflammatory cytokines. So this is a good thing for Miss Post-Vaccine Syndrome here and Miss Chronic Lyme and what else do I have? Bartonella. I would have shot that right out if I'd been taking my lithium every day. All right. It's good for neuroprotection. It helps to prevent neurodegeneration in the cortex and hippocampus. And it helps with beta amyloid and tau pathology, which is something you see in Alzheimer's disease. It helps with cerebral blood flow and angiogenesis, so you'll have more cerebral blood flow. It helps helps with mitochondrial dysfunction. So you're going to have more energy if you take lithium, according to this. Functional recovery. You'll have more memories and spatial learning, motor coordination. And you'll have less depression and anxiety-like behavior and less hypolocomotor activity. Maybe we should give some to you and you'll stop the leg twitching.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's oligodendrogenesis, which means you're going to make more oligodendrocytes and more myelination and white matter. So it could be helpful for somebody who has demyelination. So somebody with multiple sclerosis might be helpful for them. Might be helpful for neurogenesis, neural stem cells, neural progenitor cells, homing migration, implantation of mesenchymal stem cells. So the thing is... the United States EPA estimated the dietary lithium intake from food varied from 0.6 to 3.1 milligrams a day. So people who live in the Andes in northern Argentina consume 2 to 30 milligrams a day just from drinking water. As your dietary sodium and caffeine increases, so does lithium excretion in urine, which means you have a higher need for lithium, Ron.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're exposed to stress and toxins from mercury,
okay,
we got a few aspartame, things, so. BPA, MSG, Madison Square Garden, no, monosodium glutamate, and other excitotoxins, which do the glutamate thing in your brain. Mm. It increases your need for more water-soluble nutrients like magnesium, B vitamin, zinc, and lithium. Low lithium levels are associated with depression and anxiety. They are associated with reduced memory and learning. You don't sleep as well. Your sensitivity to stress and chronic pain increase. Your natural healing process design. This is like, it's like a panacea. That's really great. So the clinical research shows, as we said, it inhibits apoptosis. Lithium inhibits GSK3, which has been linked to apoptotic cell death. That's the breakdown of cells. NMDA receptors. It reduces glutamate toxicity, which helps with mood disorders, Alzheimer's, and autoimmune and inflammatory disease. It's neuroprotective. It blocks the development of beta amyloid tangles and plaque. It helps with neurogenesis, so it helps you grow new neurons with the brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF, and also glial-derived neurotrophic factor, which is going to help you with learning, memory, mood, and brain health. Neuronal stem cells, lithium stimulates the stem cells needed to produce new neurons. It's a mood stabilizer. It's has a calming effect in healthy people as well as those dealing with depression, bipolar disorder, and mania. And it's helpful for preventing suicide. It reduces suicide risk in places in the world where there's high lithium in the water, they have less suicide. And it helps with depression, and lithium has been shown to improve the effectiveness of antidepressant medication. So according to this, you can take it along with your antidepressant. And then N-acetyl aspartate, it increases that, which has been associated with higher IQ. So if I take more lithium, I'm going to be even smarter.
Oh, no.
How does lithium orotate feel? So the guy who's writing this article feels he made him a believer in microdosing lithium. And he has, Ron, adult ADHD and deals with mood swings, Ron. Mm. Okay.
What are you trying to say?
So if he is going around the bend because he's upset, he takes 5 milligrams of lithium orotate, and within 15 minutes he has a stabilized mood, and consistent use puts him in a happy mood. There are those who report you'll feel the results of taking a low dose of lithium quickly, and I find that sometimes as well. But for some, the full effect can take like 1 to 3 weeks. And if you do 5 to 10 milligrams of lithium daily, it can result in consistent results. By the way, you should always talk to a practitioner before you decide to take lithium, before you decide to take it. This is not me saying to you, take lithium. This is me saying to you, this is interesting. Suss it out with your practitioner. So if you lash out at people in anger and don't fully understand why, it could be that you have low lithium levels. I've started giving this regularly to irritable children. And I started doing it because we talked about it at the last conference I went to.
Yep.
So many neurohackers with depression and anger issues notice results quickly. Within the first couple of days, you should feel more calm, relaxed, and less stressed. Lithium at any dose is not for everyone, but if you get adequate lithium from your diet and water and still have mood swings talked about in the review, you could have other issues. Some people take lithium orotate and they're excited for life for the first time in a long time, and life is more fun and enjoyable. And some say that lithium orotate works better than any prescription they've taken. Again, this is a glowing review of lithium. Just because it's a glowing review doesn't mean you should go out and get it. And you really should talk to your practitioner. But this guy is suggesting try it for PTSD and mild insomnia. You could improve your focus, racing thoughts, and motivation levels, and have more coping ability. There's been clinical research that says it improves memory. There was a study at McMaster University in Canada, and they found that increased hippocampal volume. It helps to increase mood in recovering addicts. That's very exciting. So they found a group receiving 400 micrograms of lithium a day for 4 weeks. That's a very low dose. So, I mean, it's very easy to get a milligram of lithium orotate. They completed a mood questionnaire, and the lithium group reported significantly increased levels of happiness, friendliness, and energy. Lithium orotate was also used in the treatment of alcoholism. And in this study, they received 150 milligrams, which is a very high dose. for 6 months, along with calcium orotate, magnesium orotate, bromelain, and phospholipids. And 10 of the patients had no relapse from 3 to 10 years. So it helped with sobriety. It wasn't perfect. Lithium retains a grim and undeserved reputation because it was originally associated with serious mental illness. So many of my patients, you know, what is the number one thing I treat?
I don't know.
Stress.
Well,
that's it. That's what I treat. Everybody comes in stressed, and even when they say they're not stressed, I tell them they are. And I think I scared someone away by saying, yes, you are. I'm not. She's like, I'm not stressed. And she was doing 97 things and always being active, and she was upset a lot of the time. But I'm not stressed. And so I try to explain to people what the word stress means. Stress just means you're doing stuff. And I'll ask the person, are you going from activity to activity in your day? Or you do a little bit, and then you rest. And then you go out in the garden, and you pull some weeds, and then you sit down. And then you call your friend, talk for a while, and then you stop, and you read a book. Is that your life? No. So if that's not your life, then you're stressed. Shouldn't confuse lithium orotate with lithium carbonate. The carbonate version of lithium is prescription and comes with a host of side effects. Prescription lithium used in excess has shown to have adverse effects on thyroid and kidney function. This is not a problem when you use lithium orotate at low doses. Okay, so lithium orotate should not be used if you're dealing with significant renal or cardiovascular disease, severe dehydration, or sodium depletion if you're taking diuretics or ACE inhibitors. And don't use if you're pregnant or breastfeeding. So you can get it pretty easily from health food stores and from your friendly local practitioner. It does cross the blood-brain barrier. So there's all these reasons to try it. So anyway, we went off on lithium today, and it's a really nice thing to take. All right, so I'm going to go now. So think on the lithium thing and don't take it unless you talk to a practitioner, please. All right. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, MD, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episodes at Fran Storch, MD. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.